Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and thanks for tuning in to Inside Scoop Live. I'm your host, Juanita Watson, and today I have a special guest on the program. Bud Blanich, also known as the Common Sense Guy, is here to talk about his new book, Straight Talk for Success. Bud is an executive coach, a motivational speaker, an author, and a blogger. He is the official executive coaching guide at selfgrowth.com, and he helps his executive coaching clients succeed by applying their common sense. Dr. Blanich is Harvard-educated, but has a no-nonsense approach to his work that goes back to his roots in the steel country of western Pennsylvania. Bud is a cancer survivor and lives in Denver, Colorado with his wife, Kathy. He is a retired rugby player and an avid cyclist. In addition to helping people succeed in their lives and careers, Bud likes movies, live theater, and crime fiction. So I'm just so happy to have Bud on the phone today. Welcome to Inside Scoop Live, Bud.
Well, thanks, Juanita. I'm very happy to be here.
Yes, wonderful. So congratulations on your new book. I know it just hit shelves.
Mm-hmm. And I'm really excited about it. All my other books have really been more directed towards leaders and business people. This is the first one that I've written that's directed specifically to people who are interested in career and life success. So I'm really happy to have it out and excited about it.
So what led to you kind of branching out of the strictly business-focused book into more of the entire success-oriented book?
As I've gotten a little older and gotten a little more gray hair, a lot of my clients have asked me to do some individual coaching work with some of their high-potential people or some of their leaders. And as a result of that work, I got interested in the whole notion of, well, what does it take to be a success in your life and career? And I started putting together some material like that to work with my coaching clients. And as I started working with it, I thought that, well, this might be some information that would be helpful to young professionals or anybody who is at any place in their career who's interested in being able to build a strong career and to become a little more successful than they already are. And so I decided, well, I'll take some of these ideas that I've been sharing with my coaching clients and put them down in book form. And so the result was Straight Talk for Success.
And here we go. Well, great. So I have to ask you before we get any further along here, tell us why you are the Common Sense Guy.
Well, it's kind of funny. A few years ago, I decided that I probably needed to do some sort of personal branding to be able to differentiate myself from people. So I went out and I started asking clients and friends and family and pretty much anybody who knows me reasonably well, what are some of the words that come to mind when you think of me? And other than things that we can't really say here, people basically oftentimes would come up with the words common sense. Several people said, well, you know, I think that you have a common sense approach to life. I really value your common sense advice. And so I started thinking about that and said, you know, I have to agree. One of the things that I think I'm pretty good at is actually simplifying the complex and breaking complex ideas down into their common sense basics. And I said, well, you know, well, why not? So that seems like a good tagline for me is common sense. And so then I started thinking about, well, what should it be? Should I be, well, common sense doc, because I do have a PhD from Harvard.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, you know, that sounds too medical. And how about common sense guru? And I said, well, that sounds a little too pretentious and new agey all at the same time. And a friend of mine said, well, how about common sense guy? And I said, well, you know, I don't know. I mean, maybe that's a little too pedestrian. But then I started thinking about it, and I've often said to people, you know, I'm really just a regular guy. And so I got more in tune with it, and that's how the Common Sense Guy brand was born, through a combination of asking people what words come to mind when they think of me, and then just sort of how I think of myself. So that's common sense and guy. So hence, I am now the Common Sense Guy.
I think it's great. It's wonderful. And, you know, this the book that you have just written, Straight Talk for Success, it is based on a lot of common sense. And it is, you know, you've really broken it down and simplified your model for success. So, you know, this just follows right in line. And I want to actually ask you a little bit about your past, your life history, because I know you kind of mentioned in the beginning of this book that growing up and as you were getting out into the business world, you really didn't have any mentors or coaches, and it was really through the hard way, life experience, that you kind of, I don't know, became successful. You know, you even say experience is a great but painful teacher. So I just wonder what may be the most painful experience or hardest hurdle you had to overcome in your career would be.
To kind of go back to what you were talking about with experience, you know, there's an old saying that says good judgment is a result of experience, but unfortunately experience is usually a result of poor judgment. So I've often said to people that when you do something right the first time and then you do it right the next 1,000 times, the value of that experience is somewhat negligible. You're able to maybe do it a little faster, a little better, a little more efficiently, but essentially you did it right the first time. It's when you do something and you run into all kinds of problems as a result of what you've done that the experience really becomes to the fore and actually helps you become a better person or it opens up the opportunities for you to become a more successful person if you apply some of those learnings. There is a story in the book that I tell, and I don't know if it was really painful, but it was certainly embarrassing. I had just taken a new job, and it was with a company in New Haven, Connecticut. And New Haven has a very, very large Italian population, and they have some just wonderful Italian restaurants. And I had taken a job with a division of this corporation, and all of the I was a young guy at the time, and all of the senior human resources executives were actually going to be in town for a meeting that was going on at our offices. And then there was a dinner that evening, and the young folks like myself, I was about 26 or 27 at the time, were invited to come to the dinner. And I was really excited about this. I thought, boy, this is a real opportunity to really impress these people and to show them, you know, what I have and to really sort of strut my stuff. So then in the meantime, one of my coworkers, who was a local person, said, oh, I love this restaurant where we're going, and they have this great dish. It's called Zuppa di Pesce. And what it really is just this big platter of all kinds of different seafood. There's lobster and crab legs and everything else, and it's just really delicious. But the only problem is you have to order it for two.
Mm-hmm.
Would you be willing to do that? And I said, well, sure. I'm a nice guy. I didn't even think about it. So we get to the restaurant, and everybody orders, and so when it comes time for she and I are sitting together, when it comes time to order, we order this dish. And so the next thing I know, they come and they bring us both these huge lobster bibs. And then when they finally bring out the dish, it's on this huge platter. It's so big that we were kind of sitting at the end of the table. They moved up an extra small little table for this extra platter that they've given us. And, you know, everybody else is sitting there, and they have either like a bowl of pasta or a steak or, a piece of fish or something. And I'm sitting there with my lobster bib on, you know, with this huge, you know, I felt like I was, it was not too long after the Godfather movies were popular, that I was, you know, like somebody out of the scene from the Godfather. And so one of the lessons that I learned about that day is that, you know, business meals are not really about the food.
Mm.
Business meals are an opportunity to do business, or in this case, it was an opportunity for me to actually, you know, impress some of the senior people in the company. Now, I'm not sure if it had a negative effect on my career, but it certainly was a lost opportunity for me to be able to make any kind of a positive impression as I was sitting there cracking my lobster open with my lobster bib, and everybody else was just in their suit.
Great story. So how important do you think, you know, you say that's a lost opportunity. How important is it to really be conscious and be aware of those kinds of opportunities so you can make the most of them?
Well, I think it's really important. You know, one of the things that I talk about in the book is that, you know, you have to create positive personal impact.
Mm-hmm.
And you can create positive personal impact just by having basic idea of some etiquette. It's, you know, surprising how often, you know, you'll sit down at a business dinner, particularly if there's a bunch of guys, and people won't know basic things, like that your water glass is on your right or your bread plate's on your left. So you're sitting there, and all of a sudden you go to take a piece of bread and butter, and the person next to you is actually using your bread plate. And again, it's not really a I think, again, it's more of a lost opportunity, but I always tell people that you need to have some basic understanding of the rules of etiquette. You don't have to be versed in Emily Post or Miss Manners, but you certainly should have some idea, so if for no other reason, that you don't have to think of it when you sit down, so that you don't have to be worried about, am I doing the right thing or doing the wrong thing? And so I think that there's opportunities every day to create positive personal impact. And if you pay attention to, you know, how you look, how you dress, if you have some basic idea of the basic ideas behind etiquette, it makes it easier because these are things that you don't have to pay attention to, so that you can pay attention to the other people at the table. And by paying attention to the other people at the table, you can create a positive personal impact with them.
Mm-hmm. So we're getting into one of the five keys that make up the model that you talk about in Straight Talk for Success. So why don't you tell us a little bit about this book, and then we'll get into the other four key points.
Oh, great.
Mm-hmm.
Well, as I said, when I started working with my coaching clients, I started trying to say, well, what is it that successful people seem to have in common? I've been around enough successful people in my life to have a pretty good feel for that, and so I started to try to break it down. And what I really found was that the successful people have five things in common. The first one is everybody who I know is successful is self-confident. They feel good about themselves. They believe in themselves and their ability to be able to succeed in whatever endeavor they are engaged in. Secondly, as I mentioned before, successful people create positive personal impact. Third, they're all outstanding performers. Now, no matter how confident you are, what kind of impact you create, it's still really important to be an outstanding performer. You have to deliver the goods, do the job in an outstanding manner, you know, day after day, week after week, year after year. There's nobody I know who's successful who really isn't a great performer. Fourth, I found that everybody who I know is successful are really good communicators. They're great at conversation. They're great in writing. They're really good at standing up in front of a group of people and doing a little talk. And finally, successful people are all interpersonally competent. They have the ability to build relationships with the important people in their life. And so those are the five main areas of the book, self-confidence, positive personal impact, outstanding performance, effective communication, and interpersonal competence.
And so obviously you have probably read every business success-oriented book on the shelves today. So is this research combined with your own experience in coaching to come up with this? Like how did you really come up with, I mean, it seems so simple.
Well, again, like most things, and that's one that goes back to the whole notion of common sense, I don't think that the idea of succeeding is really all that complicated. It's mostly doing it. You know, Thomas Edison once said that a lot of people are worried about success because it comes dressed up as in work clothes. It comes dressed up in overalls and looks like work. And I think that a lot of people oftentimes don't use their common sense, because using your common sense oftentimes means that you either have to work, or it means that you might have to do something that might get somebody a little upset with you or whatever. So there's a lot. I think that most people know what to do. It's oftentimes they don't, because their common sense tells them. They oftentimes just don't do it for any variety of reasons. So you are right. I mean, I have an extensive library. I have probably my office library is now, the books are packed too deep, and sometimes I drive myself crazy looking for a book when it's in the first row.
Right, right.
But I also I pay attention to what's going on around me. So a lot of this book comes from my own experiences, and then a lot of it really does come from reflecting on people who I know personally who have been very, very successful in their lives and careers, and saying, well, what is it about them? Or what are the common things that I see about these people that seem to cut across people, no matter if they're being successful in whatever they're doing? I have friends that are successful in business. I have friends that are successful in nonprofits. I have friends that are successful in the ministries. And so what I found is that these five things, self-confidence, positive personal impact, performance, communication, interpersonal competence, were five things that seemed to cut across everybody. So one of the things that I think I am, and it's part of the whole Common Sense Guy brand, is I'm a pretty keen observer of life. And that's one of the things that really allowed me and helped me to come up with these five things as I put the book together, was just my observation of what successful people do and how they act and how they behave.
Mm-hmm. So how do most people that you come in contact with actually define success?
Well, a lot of people define success as having a lot of money. And I think while money is important, it's not necessarily the only thing. I was spending some time yesterday on a website called Vision Board Site. And if you're familiar with the book The Secret, which is something else I read as I was researching this book, they talk about the importance of creating a vision board.
Mm-hmm.
And this site, this is a little aside, but it was interesting. This site allows you to create a little visual thing for yourself around affirmations for yourself. And when I clicked on success, I was just shocked by how many of the little pictures that come with this site are focused on money.
Mm.
And again, I think money is important, but I think you need to be happy with what you're doing. I think you need to have some sort of a balance in your life, that you need to be able to sure, have enough money to be able to meet your needs, but that money as a means and an end in itself, I find, is never going to be enough. You know, Rockefeller, I guess, once said that if your only goal is to get rich, you're probably never going to make it. Because, you know, what you generally find is that, okay, well, I have some money, but I probably still could have more.
Never
and,
enough.
You know, well, it's the same thing with me, you know. It's I have, you know, lots of friends, you know, of lots and lots of money, and I think that's great. I'm doing okay, but I also find that there are other things that are more important in life than just money. So I always help try to, when I work with my coaching clients, if they're so focused on just making a lot of money, is to try to help them to see that there is more to life than just making a lot of money and having a lot of money and having a lot of things.
Yeah, there's definitely something underneath that desire for the financial gain just for money. So I'm sure that it's quite a step-by-step process when you're working one-on-one with somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So let's go over each one of these five key points that you bring up in this book, because I believe that it you have broken each one of these down into three chapters. So let's talk about the self-confident key first.
Well, you know, what I found is that self-confident people have, you know, at least three things in common. First of all, they're optimistic. I've never met a self-confident person yet who doesn't believe that they're going to succeed at what they're doing. You know, self-confident people, I think, see the glass as actually way more than half full. They really believe that when they begin whatever kind of an undertaking it is, that they're likely to succeed. And I really do think that optimism is a real key to not only self-confidence, but to success.
Do you think there's ever a downside to optimism?
You know, I get people ask me that question all the time, and I don't. I honestly think that if you are grounded, that if you can't have these wild expectations that I'll succeed without doing anything or without putting in any of the work.
Mm.
But I do think that people who are optimistic realize that it's that while it helps tremendously to begin with this whole idea that yes, I'm likely to succeed at what I'm doing, but I also at the same time, you know, I'm grounded, have to be grounded in reality to know that yeah, I can't just expect to succeed and not put in any of the time and effort that it takes to succeed. You know, my undergraduate degree is from Penn State, and they have a pretty famous football coach there named Joe Paterno, and he says the will to win is one thing, the will to prepare is what really makes people succeed. So I found that most people that I know who are optimistic understand that, yes, They look at the glass as being more than half full. They believe that they're going to be successful when they start something, but the reason they believe that they're going to be successful when they start something is that they know that it's going to take a lot of time, effort, and work. So there could be a downside to optimism if all you think is that all you have to do is just to believe you're going to be successful and that things are naturally going to fall into place.
Mm.
But to me, that's not being truly optimistic. That's being sort of more unrealistic in the way the world really works.
Okay.
So, I mean, so I can understand what you're saying about that, but I really do believe that if you are really optimistic, that you're also grounded enough that you realize that, yes, you believe that you're going to be successful at what you do, but you also realize that there's going to be a lot of time and effort that you're going to have to put in to make the success a reality.
A lot of follow-through.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so the second piece about self-confidence is, people face their fears and deal with them. You know, a lot of people, are afraid of failing, and so they procrastinate. They don't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's one of the biggest challenges that I have when I work with my coaching clients is to help them realize that trying something and failing isn't necessarily dooming you to a life of failure. If anything, it provides you with some experience that you can then use to help you build your success later on. So I do find that self-confident people are willing to face whatever fears they have and then do something about it.
Mm-hmm.
And usually what they find is that that action cures fear, because once you take a step in the right direction, any kind of positive step, people find that they become a little more self-confident. And even if they fail, they find that it wasn't as bad as they thought it would be. All they need to do is go back, retool, and try something else. And then the third one is, I think that self-confident people surround themselves with positive people. And I think this works in two ways. You have to choose your friends wisely. There's a character that Rachel Dratch plays on Saturday Night Live. Her name is Debbie Downer.
Mm-hmm.
And anytime you talk to Debbie Downer, she always points out the negative in any kind of a situation. And so what I always tell people to do is, look, we all know Debbie Downers, and we need to kind of, get them out of our lives or interact with them as infrequently as possible.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, I always I'm big on mentoring, because I think that mentors by definition are positive people, because mentors are willing to help other people succeed by sharing some of their life experiences.
Mm-hmm.
So I always tell people, try to find a mentor, somebody who is somebody to whom you can look up, who has what you want and is willing to share it with you. And by the same token, I always tell people, look, chances are you know more than you might think you do,
mm-hmm.
and you have a lot to share. And so I always advise people to also think about becoming mentors, because I think that mentoring somebody else can really help your self-confidence.
That's a really good point. I don't think a lot of people would think about that.
Yeah, no, it's really true. I mean, by helping other people and by just sharing what you know, whatever kind of knowledge it is that you have, you end up feeling better about yourself, and that builds your self-confidence.
Hmm.
So, again, that's it. Self-confidence, I think, are three things. Self-confident people are optimistic. They face their fears, and they deal with them. They take some action. And that the self-confident people surround themselves with positive people.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay, then we have positive personal impact, which you've touched on already.
Mm-hmm.
You want to
three things there. I mean, just real quickly on that
sure.
one. I talked about the Common Sense Guy as my personal brand. I really do think that people with positive personal impact are known for something. They develop their personal brand. And in some way, they figure out who they are. And we're all known for either our ability to maybe write clearly. We're known for our ability to think things through. We're known for our ability to be a good friend. Whatever it is, I think it's important to put together some kind of personal brand and to emphasize that. That's one of the things I do with Common Sense. Pretty much everything that I write or say or, for example, on my blog, I post every day, and the very last thing I say is a summary, and it always says, and so the common sense point here is. So one of the things that I think that you do with a personal brand is that you develop it, and then you find a way to constantly promote it. The second one is, I think that people with personal impact, powerful personal impact, are just impeccable in their presentation itself. That doesn't mean that you always need to be the best dressed person there, but you certainly should be one of the best dressed people there. Your shoes should be shined, your hair should be combed, and you should dress appropriately for your work situation. If you're working at Google, you probably don't need to show up in a suit. If you're working at a bank in New York City, you better have some nice suits, whether you're a man or a woman, when you show up there. So you need, I always advise people there to try to dress one level above what's expected of them.
Oh.
So if khakis and golf shirts are okay, make sure that yours are both both khakis and golf shirts are pressed, and occasionally wear a nice pair of slacks and a regular shirt, you know, collared shirt that's a button down or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
If you just sort of dress one level above what's expected of you, you're going to make a positive impact.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last one is what we had talked about before. I think people with who create positive personal impact know and practice the basic rules of etiquette. And to me, the most basic rule of etiquette is to make people around you feel comfortable. And as long as you do whatever you can to make everybody else around you feel at ease, you're doing a great job, and people are going to remember you and think highly of you and think well of you.
Mm-hmm. Great, great point.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Established in 1998, Rebecca's Reads is a book review and publicity service serving a large reading audience as well as a wide community of authors, publishers, publicists, and buyers and sellers. They offer reviews of recently published books as well as chapter readings, teasers, and videos to help you decide what book you would like to read next. Their insightful author interviews take connecting reader and author one step further, and if you decide you would like to purchase a book, an easy-to-navigate link will allow you to purchase the book immediately online. For the authors, publicists, and publishers, Rebecca's Reads has a variety of publicity services to help them market their books to their reading audience. Their services are budget-friendly and effective. For buyers and sellers, they have a monthly list of current reviews in the Book Review Index for easy browsing, as they know your time is precious and efficiency is a priority. Be sure to visit RebeccasReads.com and browse around their new space. Whatever your literary need, this user-friendly website may be just what you're looking for. Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. Just to remind you, I'm talking today with Bud Belanich, author of Straight Talk for Success. You can find out more about Bud through his website, budbelanich.com. Okay, outstanding performance.
Well, I think, you know, again, three things there. Outstanding performers are technically competent. They really know what they're doing. For example, it's clear that you're a great interviewer. You have a nice, you have a great voice. You have a soothing way about you. You are in, just, you make me want to talk to you and hear what I want to know. I mean, you're very technically competent at doing what you're doing, and so any outstanding performer is. And I think that a key to remaining technically competent is being a lifelong learner. I think that particularly these days, the half-life of knowledge is so short that we all have to keep on learning. I was in the airport in Denver the other day, and there was a little billboard up as an advertisement for the University of Denver's Business School, and it said 5 years from today, business will be relying on technology that's yet to be invented.
Oh.
Is this scary or is this inspiring?
Wow.
It's at Daniels College of Business, University of Denver. And that's kind of inspiring to me. I think it's kind of cool that we are in a world where things are moving so quickly.
Mm.
But that does mean if you want to stay successful, you want to be technically competent, you need to keep learning and to make sure that you stay up with things. That's one of the reasons that I have so many books here, is that I'm always trying to stay on top of what's happening, not just in, you know, my field, but in business in general. So that's the first thing about outstanding performers. I mean, they really are technically competent. They know what they're doing, and they continue to learn and grow. The second one is, and this is pretty simple stuff here, they set and achieve goals. You can't really, you're never going to really accomplish everything, anything of real value if you don't take the time to set goals. In my Success Common Sense blog, on the last day of January, one of the things I blogged about was, well, here we are, 1/12 of the way through the year. Have you written down your goals yet? Trying to remind people. And just last week, we're coming to the end of March, the end of the first quarter. Again, I was asking people, have you written your goals? Have you set milestones? Did you have milestones for the first quarter? How did you do against achieving them? I think that people who are outstanding performers not only set goals, they set milestones to help them reach these goals, and they pay constant attention to these goals. They kind of say, hey, am I doing what I need to do to be able to meet the goal that I set for myself? Mm-hmm. So just setting a goal isn't enough. You have to follow through with it and pay attention and to constantly stay on top of it if you're going to be successful.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last one is I think that outstanding performers are well organized. You know, they manage their time, their stress, their lifestyle well. There's so many things that goes into, you know, personal organization. And, again, computers have helped that greatly these days. You know, my life seems to be run off of my smartphone these days, my computer. Nevertheless, people who are outstanding performers are well organized so they can take full advantage of the time that's available to them. So, again, to just real quickly, you know, outstanding performers are technically competent, and they remain technically competent because they keep on learning. They set and achieve goals, high goals, and then they're well organized.
Mm-hmm. Streamlined. Great. Okay, so the fourth key, communication skills.
And again, effective communicators, I really think, have three things in common. First, they're excellent conversationalists. They're able to do what you and I are doing, you know, over the telephone here, over the telephone, but they also do it very well in person. They're able to engage people and to make other people want to have a conversation with them. And I always tell people that the big secret to that is just ask people questions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how are you? What are you doing? How's your family? What's happening in your business? Tell me a little bit more about what you're doing. Obviously, you know that because, again, of your work doing these kinds of interviews. But you can, without ever even telling people too much about yourself, people can walk away from a conversation thinking, boy, he or she's a great person. I love that conversation because everybody loves to talk about themselves.
Yeah.
And so one of the keys to being a good communicator is to be a good conversationalist.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the keys to being a good conversationalist is to ask people questions and to listen to what they have to say.
Yeah, and genuinely listen, too.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
It's as simple as that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, I think you need to write in a clear, concise, easily readable manner. You know, I think that, you know, I was fortunate in that I studied journalism as an undergraduate, and that kind of taught you to break things down into, you know, very simple sentences, subject, verb, object. And that's really done me well in my life and career because it makes my writing easy to read. It's not necessarily going to win me any awards for creative writing. But what I'm really trying to do is to communicate, not necessarily to show off my vocabulary or to show off my skills in creating, you know, compound sentences and complex sentences and compound complex sentences. And so the more you can write in a concise, easy-to-read manner. I always tell people, you know, when you're, if you're having trouble with your writing, is to just read it out loud and say, do I understand this? Will the other person be able to understand this? And if the answer is no, go back and rewrite it and try to make it a little more simple and easy to understand.
Yes.
And then the third one is I think that, you know, good communicators are good presenters. They're excellent presenters. They can present to groups of 2 or 200. And I think that it's, you know, presentation skills are something that people can learn. And a lot of times it goes back to self-confidence, to the whole idea of facing your fears and dealing with them.
Right, because this is kind of one of the biggest fears out there for people is speaking to groups and presenting themselves.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, there's that old, apparently, you know, there was a survey several years ago, and it was, I think I saw maybe over 20 years ago, and it was, they literally asked people to list what they're most afraid of.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking in public was, you know, on top of the list. And
I don't think things have changed.
Yeah, I know. But get this. Death was fourth.
Oh,
my
God.
That would mean that most people would rather actually die than have to give a talk.
Yeah.
And I don't think, you know, if you compare it that way, that that's actually, you know, really true.
Yeah.
But it really does show how high, how much anxiety people have around, you know, speaking in public. And so I won't go into it here, but I have a little method that I teach people. And again, all it is sort of breaking down how you develop and deliver a talk into some easily manageable steps.
Mm.
And if you can manage each of these steps to learn and use each of these steps, you can do a good talk, and you can do it without being necessarily absolutely frightened to death.
Nervous. Right. Is that in your book, Bud?
Yeah, I talk about it. I talk about it a fair bit in the book.
Great. Great. I know, if anything, that's a sure sell for your book.
Well, yeah, it's probably worth the price of the book just for that. But no, it really is. This whole notion, I think you have to be a good – anybody that I know, again, who's successful is a great communicator.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had an opportunity. I was at a party once here in Denver, and it was hosted by a guy by the name of Federico Pena, who at one point was the mayor of Denver and then was also Secretary of Transportation in the Clinton administration. And we happened to be invited to this holiday party at his home. And I can remember having a conversation with him, and I only talked to him for about 3 or 4 minutes, and I'm sure he talked to everybody, you know, who was there that evening. But for those 3 or 4 minutes, I was the center of his universe.
Mm-hmm.
And I really learned a lot about conversation skills. And I've really watched people that I know who are extremely successful, and they have that ability to really zero in and have a great conversation with you and make you feel that you're a very important person while you're, you know, standing there or sitting there speaking with them.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it's conversation, the ability to write, and then, as we talked about, to overcome your fear and to be able to do some good presentations.
Great. Okay, so the final key, interpersonal competence.
Yeah, and again, I think interpersonally competent people, as with the other ones, have 3 things in common. I think the first thing that really distinguishes interpersonally competent people is their level of self-awareness. They really understand themselves. They understand what makes themselves tick.
Mm-hmm.
And when you understand yourself, you can then start to understand other people, because you can say, okay, how is this person similar or different from me? And so in general in life, I'm pretty intuitive, and I'm a pretty big picture kind of a thinker. So I'll sometimes go from A to B to F, and sort of C, D, and E will sort of magically happen in my mind. There's a lot of people that I know that, you know, particularly because I do a lot of work with people who are engineers and are highly technical, they need to go A to B to C to D to E to F.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the things that I realize about them, how they're different from me. So if I'm going to be successful in building relationships with them, it's not up for me to be frustrated because they're not quite as intuitive as me. It's up for me to adapt myself to them and to be able to present information to them in a manner that they like to receive it.
Mm.
So I really think that that whole notion of understanding yourself, which then allows you to look at another person and say, how am I similar or different to this person, can help you as you go about trying to build relationships, which is really the second key to interpersonal competence, is your ability to build lasting, mutually beneficial relationships with important people in your life, so that people see relationships with you as give and take, not one-sided on either your part or their part.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third one is that interpersonally competent people are good at resolving conflict, because no matter how interpersonally competent you are, sooner or later you're going to run into conflict with somebody. And one of the keys that I always tell people there is, look, no matter what, no matter how much you may seem to be in disagreement with somebody, you probably can find a small place where you agree on something.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can focus on where the two of you agree, you can now start to build maybe a solution to your disagreement, as opposed to focusing on where you disagree, which all that does is lead, you know, both of you to kind of dig your heels in and never be able to get anything done.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, those are the 3 things that are important about interpersonal competence, is self-awareness, but not self-awareness for self-awareness' sake, self-awareness for your ability to use it to be more influential with the people in your life.
Mm-hmm. It seems like there's a trend in the whole business community, in the success personal development community, where we're looking at self-awareness and looking at those issues is really becoming, I don't know, a hot topic. Why do you think that is?
Well, Probably the short answer is that a lot of us kind of go through life oblivious. But I do think that
you're just seeing it more in more and more books these days.
Yeah, I mean, I'm certified to use the Myers-Briggs Type Indicator and the DISC and both, and there's any variety of all these different instruments out there. And it's interesting. I think that people like them. People, you know, if ever I'm asked to do like a little workshop with, say, the Myers-Briggs, people really get into it. They seem to like this whole notion of having a little better understanding of themselves. And I think it's because sometimes by nature, maybe as human beings, we're not that introspective. And so a little bit of introspection is something that people can enjoy. But one of the things that I've learned is that a lot of times people say, oh, well, this is the way I am according to, you know, this particular little, you know, test.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, and wouldn't it be great if the rest of the world were this way? Well, maybe it would be.
Not reality.
Might not be, because it might be pretty boring if we were all the same. And so I think that the real key to this whole, this self-awareness thing is not who am I, but it's like who am I, and again, how am I similar or different to other people?
Mm-hmm.
Because once I understand that, excuse me, if I can tell how I'm similar to somebody or different, I can start to adapt, you know, how I deal with these people to make sure that I communicate with them better and that I'm more influential with them. So for me, the important piece here, it's not self-awareness for self-awareness' sake. It's more self-awareness to be able to use, to be able to say, how am I, again, similar or different from somebody else so that I can actually adapt my style so I can be more effective as I communicate with them. And I think that's the real key to this whole self-awareness piece.
That is really key, and I'm sure that lessens misunderstandings completely if you bring that level of self-awareness in.
Mm-hmm.
And then so less conflict, which is what you were saying.
Exactly,
mm-hmm.
Exactly. And, you know, it's easier to communicate with people when you are adaptable. I mean, I'll tell you another story. I was, working with a guy, and he'd been a client of mine at one company, and he'd moved to another company. And he was a manufacturing manager, and he took over as a plant manager. And so he'd asked me to come to help him work with his team. And so I said, fine. And so we were going to do this, you know, on like a Tuesday. And I arrived at his office, Monday evening. And it was a different town than Denver. And, you know, we were friends. We were actually going to go to dinner that evening. And so dropped in, and we were chatting a little bit. And he said, well, where's the agenda for tomorrow? And I said, well, first we'll do this, and then we'll do this, and then we'll do that and finish up with this.
Uh-huh.
And he said, well, where's the agenda? And I said, well, first we'll do this, then we'll do this, then we'll do that, and then we'll finish up with this. And he says, well, yeah, I heard you, but where's the agenda? And I said, oh, you mean like on a piece of paper? And he said, yeah, an agenda. And I said, well, you know, I don't really have one, but first we'll do this, and okay, I heard you. So he had already shut down his computer. He turns it back on, and he fires up PowerPoint, and so now we do like five, you know, bullet points. And he's somewhat happy because we have an agenda, but he's not real happy because it doesn't say from 9 o'clock to 10:30, you know, it's going to be this, and then 10:30 to 11, that. And so we're having a meeting, and so we're leaving to go to dinner, and he says, you know, I'm a little nervous because we're going to be winging it. So I'm kind of getting a little frustrated because thinking that, well, you know, I've done these kind of things a million times. I'm not winging it.
Mm-hmm.
So we have the meeting. And it goes off perfectly. And so I'm wanting to be a little bit of a, you know, smart guy. So I say, what'd you think of the meeting? And he said, yeah, I guess it went well, but we were lucky because we were winging it. So I'm kind of frustrated. So I'm on the plane going home, and I'm thinking to myself, you know, wasn't he kind of like, he didn't trust me and all these kind of things. And I think, you know, that's not really true. If there's a problem here, the problem's with me. Because he had pretty high needs for structure.
Mm.
He was in a new company where he was showing enough confidence in me to bring me in to work with his team. And it's not up to him to adapt himself to me. It's up to me to adapt myself to him. So the real lesson I learned from that, it's another one of these lessons from experience, was that it goes back to this point here. I knew going in that he was a pretty detail-oriented guy. And so if I had really thought about it, I would have provided him with a pretty detailed agenda, because that would have lessened his anxiety as we went in to do this meeting that we were going to do. And so that was a lesson that I learned, is pay attention. Okay, when I'm working with somebody who's more like myself, who's more of a big picture, go with the flow person, I don't need to give them a detailed agenda. When I'm working with somebody who is like this person I was describing, that I need to be a little more...
Blog Talk Radio.